the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. As the Houston Texans purposely take aim at our local programming, we are pleased to welcome John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who normally joins us at 5:05, but he's got stuff to do this afternoon, so he's kind enough to give us some time right now. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. I don't understand why the Texans decided to mess with my time with you guys. I did everything I could to get them to go back to the way it used to be with Bill O'Brien's news conference, player and visiting coach conference call. And I'm guessing they just, because I know they'd be happy to change everything around to accommodate us.
John, first of all, how's everything going? A lot of rain with Imelda kind of passing through. Everything okay down in Houston?
Yeah, it has been raining. I haven't seen any flooding. Last night I went to the Astros game with my wife. I wanted to see Verlander pitch, and the fact they're in a neck-and-neck race with the Yankees for best record and home field advantage in the American League playoffs, as well as, of course, trying to get it for the World Series. And it was raining, and still about 30,000 fans showed up. Between Verlander and Dollar Hot Dog Nights, I guess there's no amount of rain that could have kept a lot of those people away.
You think the Astros will get that home field advantage? This will go down to the wire, don't you think?
They got 10 games left. They got Verlander, who's 19-6. Tonight they got Garrett Cole, who's 17-5. Next night, Zach Greinke is 15-5. And then the next night, Wade Miley, who's 14-5. So they've got a good foursome. You need three for the playoffs. Greinke, who they traded for last month, has pitched in 11 playoff games in his career, but he's had an ERA in the fours. But I think when it comes to starting pitching, I don't think anybody can touch the Astros' top three. There's a couple teams that are good, but the Yankees are talking about only using one starter, James Paxton, and then kind of going with openers and closers, and boy, that's not the Yankee way. I'll believe that when I see it.
John, how do you think Daniel Jones will do as the Giants' starting quarterback?
Jimmy, we knew it was only a matter of time when they drafted him so high. And I remember, you know, when he was drafted, everybody blasted the pick. Dave Gettleman, the GM, just took his lumps. The two tabloids up there, the Post and the Daily News, just killed him for making that pick. Now, of course, they're praising the heck out of Jones. Jones looked real good in preseason, but that's against backups. It's against vanilla defenses. Now he's going to have defenses trying to confuse him. And the Giants are not very good, but one thing they worked on last year, and it didn't pan out last year, was they had rebuilt their offensive line. But after two games, the offensive line has done a good job. He's more mobile than Eli Manning. You know, Eli never missed a game because of an injury. Till this week, he only missed one when they started Geno Smith and then went back to Eli. And this is the last year of his contract. I'm guessing next year he'll go somewhere else. Right now, if they wanted to put him on a trade block, there's teams that could certainly use him with his early rash of injuries at quarterback. But I'm like everybody else. I'm eager to see how Jones does. It's the end of an era for the Giants, and I wish Eli the best, whether he stays there or goes somewhere else. I'm guessing he's going somewhere else.
Miami has been outscored 102-10. Are the Dolphins capable of going 0-16?
Boy, that's just such nitpicking, Jimmy. What do you want? Season's only two games old. My God, so many things can change. I can't say they're worse than the Browns 2 years ago or the Lions, the other 0-16 teams, but it's like the Dolphins are trying to do it. Those teams were not trying to do it. And they're going to have some competition. And the Jets might be one of those teams. The Giants might be one of those teams. Any team starting a rookie quarterback has a possibility of getting the best record, I mean the worst record. Now, if it were the Cardinals, the Giants, or the Jets, they all got their quarterbacks. Say they all finished ahead of below the Dolphins. The Dolphins would have to trade some of those picks to be able to move up to get the top pick. And what, you know, it'd be behoove the Dolphins if it wasn't just Tua Tagovailoa being the top pick. Maybe Justin Herbert at Oregon, who's more of your traditional 6 foot six quarterback. And there's a long way to go on that. And I feel bad for their fans, but mainly I feel bad for the players who are still on that team. And because just because you have all those draft picks doesn't mean you're going to use them wisely. Go back over, stay back like 2013, 13, 14, 15, and go over like the next five drafts and look at the first round picks. How many hadn't panned out? How many already with other teams? And it shows you what a crapshoot it is. So not only do the Dolphins have to draft right, but they also have to coach those guys. And we don't know if their coaching staff's any good because Brian Flores is first-time head coach.
Ben Roethlisberger out for the year with a non-contact injury. John, do you think we might have seen the last of Roethlisberger in the NFL?
I do not, Jimmy. I think that, as he said, he wants to come back stronger than ever. It's not an injury that is so serious it's career-threatening. It was weird the way he threw the ball and grabbed his elbow and needed surgery. Season over. It reminded me of some pitchers. But I think Ben will get it done. I think he'll come back, and he'll be strong, and he'll want to keep playing. These guys want to play into their 40s. They have fun. They're making a whole lot of money. So I do not think we've seen the last of him. Now, what if Mason Rudolph, who's a third-round pick, that's the highest pick they've used on a quarterback since Roethlisberger was first round in 2004. What if Rudolph lights it up? What if they go to the playoffs, bounce back from this 0-2 start? Then they got an issue. But it's a good issue because if you decided the Rudolph era is going to continue, then you trade Roethlisberger and see what you can get.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We talk about the National Football League. John, for way too long, the fair question was, what exactly is a catch according to the National Football League? Took a while to get that settled. Now the question is, what isn't roughing the passer? If you watch the Broncos and the Bears, the answer was everything was roughing the passer. At what point, I mean, is it just harsh words now or what draw flags?
They are told to err on the side of caution when it comes to the quarterbacks. Now, Big Ben didn't get hurt when he was hit, but he's out. Drew Brees is out. Andrew Luck retired. Sam Darnold is out. You know, when you take those quarterbacks away, the teams aren't any good, and the NFL is not as much fun. So rather issue a penalty on Bradley Chubb, no matter how unjustified, that could cost the Broncos a game but keep a quarterback healthy. And that's the way they look at it. You know, it's so funny. Remember back in the 70s when they started to protect the quarterbacks a little more and all the defensive players said, oh, you need to put them in skirts. It was so insulting. But, you know, some it's subjective. But if I'm an official and I'm going to – if it's close, I'm throwing that flag. Because if a guy doesn't get hurt, if he doesn't get hurt, I'm not getting blamed. I'm getting blamed for a bad flag, but the guy's still in the game, and that's my goal.
Well, I just wonder how you coach defensive players. The Bears got flagged for at least one questionable roughing the passer penalty earlier in the game. The Broncos, you mentioned the Bradley Chubb play. I mean, he hit the quarterback as the ball was leaving his hand. I mean, I just don't know what you tell a defensive player he can or can't do in that instant.
One of the problems is a lot of good officials retired, and they got a lot of rookies in there. Rookies make mistakes, whether they're players, talk show hosts, sports writers, it doesn't matter. Rookies make mistakes. But those guys, of course, their mistakes are magnified.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. We've got another segment with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk.
your car,
in your office, in your house, in your shower.
99.1, the sports animal. Pass the body wash.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle.
John, what happened with Trevor Daniel?
Boy, I felt bad for that kid. He broke his ankle. He's done. That was right. I thought that's Trevor Siemian. Trevor Daniel, I was stunned when he got cut. He had 43 yards. He had a 40.9-yard. He had won the battle in training camp over Brian Anger, an 8-year veteran. It was close, and their stats last year were similar. They made the move, and he didn't have a bad punt. It's not like they had a return against him. Really, really surprised when they did that. Bill O'Brien today said he'll somebody else. He did a good job. We made the move we thought was the team.
In regard to Antonio Brown, so the Patriots pick him up, and then there's the civil suit that's filed by his former trainer. Then another person comes out and makes a claim against him. Were you surprised at all that the Patriots played him rather than wait to see exactly what was going on?
Well, they got a guy up on drug charges. Their safety, Chung, he's playing. Somebody in the Boston Globe, the Patriot way is to look the other way. And I think that's a great example of it. Somebody had that the owner, Robert Kraft, would not have signed him if he'd known about that. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, give me a break. That's great. Out after somebody is signed in that situation.
Is Roger Goodell looking the other way?
No, they're investigating it. They have one that has accused him of civil suit in talking for 10 hours to their investigators, and at some point they're going to want to talk to Antonio Brown.
John, for all the things that you've seen in your time covering the NFL, what was it like to see David Quisenberry score a touchdown for the Titans last week?
John, that's one of the coolest things. I've known David since he was on IR as a rookie, and then at second training camp he collected on the field, and everybody thought he had heat issues. Next time they tell us he's got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he started a 3.5-year battle. He was around most of the time. Bill O'Brien, player, comes in complaining of being tired. Or I say, hey, look out at David. He's working. Hey, O'Brien, we asked about that touchdown this week, and he, of course, everybody was happy for him. And I just, knowing what he went through here, what it was for him to get the ring the bell when he was cancer, was in remission over at MD Anderson. He rang that bell so hard he ripped it off the wall. And there was a great picture somebody took of David after he scored, holding the ball up in the air. He ought to be inspiration for everybody, not just athletes, but anybody that gets cancer. And non-oncology is a serious kind of cancer. Inspiration for everybody. Not only can you beat it, but you can come back from it stronger than ever.
There were all four teams in the AFC South were playing one another last Sunday. What did you think first of the Texans? This time they were able to turn away the team that was trying to score at the end as they stopped the 2-point try by Jacksonville. And then the Colts went into Tennessee, and on the day that the Titans retired the jerseys for Steve McNair and Eddie George, Indianapolis once again rained on a Titans parade.
I was stunned that the Titans didn't win that game. To go to Cleveland and beat up them as bad as they did, didn't come home, a revenge game of regular season in 2018. When Indy came to Nashville and all the Titans had to do was win and go to the playoffs and they got beat up bad, you'd think this was the time to do it, buoyed by the emotion of retirement of the jerseys, and then they get beat. Marcus Mariota did not play well. Fans and media down on him again. And Indy is 1-1. They lost in overtime at the Chargers, and then they win it Tennessee, now they get to go home for a couple of games. And Texans survived against Jacksonville. They go to the Chargers. And then they have back-to-back home games against Carolina and Atlanta. So this division, which I thought was going to be the best, is not. And I think any team is capable of winning, except maybe the Jaguars, because Nick Foles is out and they're going with rookie sixth-round pick Gardner Minshew.
Where does the Jags cornerback Jalen Ramsey end up?
I think they're going to stay right there. I think his problems with Doug Marrone, I think they'll give him a new contract after the season to make him the highest paid defensive back in history, and they'll have a new coach, and he'll be happy.
Where do you think Melvin Gordon will end up?
Boy, that's a good one, isn't it? Melvin Gordon, who is holding out and losing game checks by the week, plus being fined $40,000 a day, and the two players who've taken his place are doing better than he did last year as far as average per carry, average per catch. Gordon's a good back, but it is an ill-advised holdout. I hope it's not his agent. I hope it's him, because this is money he's not going to get back. And they dug in on him, and they're not changing.
There are 9-0-2 teams in the NFL, and I saw a stat that only like 12% of teams that start 0-2 make the playoffs. Is there an 0-2 team that you think can get it turned around and make the playoffs?
I would have said right away Pittsburgh, but with Roethlisberger out, I don't think so. I'm trying to think. Let's see who else is 0-2.
Dolphins, Jags, Jets, Giants.
Dolphins, Jags, Jets. Keep telling me.
Denver.
None of them.
Denver.
Nope.
Cincinnati. Maybe.
Nope.
Carolina.
Nope.
Washington.
Nope.
All right.
All those teams got big-time problems. Some of them have quarterback problems. Some got coaches problems, and they're all right where they should be, winless. Now, surprises to me, the two biggest surprises I've seen, team-wise, San Francisco being 2-0, and Lamar Jackson throwing the ball as well as he has, and I don't care if it's against Miami and Arizona. His passes have been pinpoint, which I thought was never going to be a possibility with him.
Of the 2-0 teams, do you think Buffalo's the least likely to make the playoffs?
I think that's a great way to look at it. I think they've been lucky to play the Giants and the Jets. They may be New York State champions, but that's the only thing they're going to have to celebrate.
What did you think of the Steelers adding Minkah Fitzpatrick? And who do you think anybody will step up and perhaps pay the two first-rounders that Jacksonville is looking for if the Jags look to move Jalen Ramsey?
No, I don't think there's any way. No, if somebody's going to give up two first-round picks for Ramsey. He wants to be the highest-paid defensive back in history. Plus, he's not bashful, his personality. He's not bashful at all about letting people know what he thinks. He's not bashful about going after a coach on the sideline. And so I don't know what it is about cornerbacks and wide receivers. It's almost like it started with Chad Ochocinco when he started being such a diva. I don't know what it is about those positions that produces such divas, but they do, and they are. And I think Ramsey, I don't think anybody will give him two number ones. I don't think they'll even entertain offers. I think they'll be looking for a new head coach next year, and they may force Tom Coughlin to retire.
The Eagles, working with so many players nicked up that they decided to go ahead and cancel practice and just kind of have a walkthrough for the younger players that may get playing time this week because so many are questionable at this stage of the week. What do you think about a team being in that position just 2 weeks into the season?
Isn't that amazing? I've never seen that this early in the season. And a lot of teams got injuries. The Chargers got more than most. And I don't think they're doing that. They don't practice hard anyway. You know, they don't hit. They're too afraid of injuries. It's so weird. It's like the more afraid you are of injuries, the more injuries you're going to get. And Doug Peterson had a Super Bowl. He ought to know what he's doing. If it works out and they bounce back, maybe you'll see practice be walkthroughs most of the time.
Some people thought the Chargers, and they still could very well be, 14 games left in the season, but the Chargers play host to the Texans this week. It might be the most puzzling result from week two, and that was the Chargers losing to Detroit. There is the cliche on any given Sunday, but for some reason, the Chargers just when you think they're ready to take that step and win a division and perhaps push the Chiefs, they show something like that that says, nope, not this time.
They had, they had two touchdowns called back because of penalties. They had a fumble at the Detroit one, and with a chance to win the game at the end, Phillip Rivers threw an interception in the end zone. They could not have played any worse. Rivers said afterward, this had nothing to do with injuries. This had to do with bad play, and he put himself at the top. And the Texans are hoping they'll do it again, but I think they probably, it's kind of like getting an upset stomach. You get it all out of your system at once, and you bounce back. I'm guessing that's what happened to the Chargers. They threw it all up at Ford Field, and they'll be fine when they get back to their 27,000-seat bandbox of a stadium that I'm fired up to see because I've never seen an NFL game in a soccer stadium.
Do you like the Texans' chances to beat the Chargers?
Oh, Jimmy, they could. They could have beaten the Saints, and they lost, as you know, on a 58-yard field goal with no time left. But until they beat a good team on the road with a great quarterback, I'm not picking them. I'm going with the Chargers.
Is Jacoby Brissett good enough to get the Colts in the playoffs?
I'm guessing he is. I mean, he came close to beating the Chargers. He won in Nashville. I'll know more when I see him in the first game against the Texans. Texans play at Kansas City and Indianapolis back-to-back, and he's 3-0 against the Texans, 1-0 with New England, 2-0 2 years ago when the Colts and the Texans were decimated by injuries and both finished 4-12. We call him the Texans killer down here. He's 3-0. You know, he hadn't thrown for 200 yards, but he's thrown for some touchdowns, made some big plays. So I'm going to say, yeah, they're good enough to get in a wild card or win the AFC South.
Can the Saints win a game with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback?
He's won games as a starter, and he has overcome that terrible, terrible knee injury. So I'm going to say yes. You know, they want him to help them be 500 at worst, and then hopefully they get Breeze back in November. And you know what they say in the NFL, it's not what you do in September and October, but November and December.
We've seen opposing fan bases take over the soccer field that is the home stadium for the L.A. Chargers. Do you think the Texans can be the next team to do that?
I do think they can. Texans got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. And as long as Deshaun Watson's playing, they got a chance to beat anybody.
John, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Guys, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. A fantastic follow on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. We'll get a break and be back with more. This is Sports Talk. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got a lot coming your way from Tennessee football as the Volunteers continue their prep work for Florida and their first conference game. Yesterday, though, was the first scrimmage for Tennessee baseball in fall ball, and it was yesterday that I caught up with Tennessee coach Tony Vitello. We start our this part of the conversation by talking about those that are joining his program this fall.
You put together a very good class, and then, as you guys are wont to do, kept working and working, and there are a couple of additions to the program that weren't a part of the original signing class. Tell me about guys like Tim McHugh and Drew Gilbert.
Yeah, you know, Tim had an unfortunate set of circumstances where things didn't work out at TCU, and whether it was too many bodies there or whatever it might have been, he was searching for a place in the summer, and his people have a very close relationship with our people, and I think that's a testament to Coach Elander and Coach Kivett. They've made inroads like you can't believe with a lot of high school coaches, summer coaches, and then, too, just kids in general. So we're kind of to the point now where we have guys beating down our door just as much as we're kind of going out there and trying to beat the bushes. And then with Drew Gilbert, it was a very good story where we competed against literally every SEC program to get him here after he decided Oregon State was no longer the place for him. After Pat Casey won a national championship there, he retires, and Drew decided he wanted to commit to a coaching staff that was going to be there. And a very long story short, and the end of a saga ended with us adding a guy who I think can play in the outfield for us and pitch. And he's a very high-energy kid, and he's just like all of our other guys. He's got to earn what he gets, and we're coaching him the same as the others. But in knowing what he can do, he could be an exciting one for fans to watch because he's got a good backstory now with how he chose Tennessee. But also, he's a spark plug out there. Probably one we're going to have to calm down more than we're going to have to fire up.
Well, and I don't think there's any question you guys are going to continue to beat the bushes coast to coast in order to get the best talent that fits your program here at Tennessee. But what is it like for all the hard work and the hustle that you and your staff have put in since you arrived in Knoxville? What is it like to have some guys say, I like what's going on there, when Tennessee wasn't perhaps in the original conversation?
It's tremendous. Like I said, I think the success came quicker and faster than I thought it would, but there was the but, and it was a big one. It was, you know, there's a lot of guys who, man, you're our favorite coaching staff, or we loved it, or it's a little too late. We already were recruited by this other program, and now we don't have those excuses as a coaching staff not to get it done. And then, like, you know, on the other side of the fence, the families now know who we are and what we're about. And sure, we have some shortcomings, but we've also got some phenomenal things going on here, including donors keep stepping up and helping us with our facility. And that's all kind of stemming from the administration's work, too. So you're starting to see things really pop. And we got our first commitment in the 2023 class, and he's a top 10 player in the country, and he's a top 10 kid in the country. And you can't comment on that stuff too much, but I'm keeping it vague and want to use an example to illustrate that it's kind of happening to where we're competing the way we should in the SEC. And that ultimately should result into us competing on the field the way you should in the SEC, which I thought we did last year, but not quite to the standard that we are envisioning.
What is it like to have a big group of newcomers that arrived last season and they did such a great job of meshing with the players that were here, and now you have another solid group of newcomers? There's not as much time in the program for the guys that made the transition last year, a pretty easy one. Do you expect the same as far as building chemistry, and how important does that make this fall ball period?
I think part of it is the natural process of us being here longer. We don't really have a system, but kind of our culture, our approach, and things we're looking for and expect are on the table. And the older guys or returning players have done an incredible job at kind of bringing along the incoming guys. And it's really worked well. It's helped them mesh, but it's also helped, you know, us as coaches, we can go through things quicker. And so I think that's going to be a constant theme through the fall, because it's been there from day one and even in the summer a little bit. So I think that'll help speed things up for what our standards are, what we're looking for. And that will allow for us to give our guys just more repetitions to show what they can do. And, you know, we've kind of already set our scrimmage schedule, and it is a heavy one. We will play probably close to double the amount of scrimmage innings that we did our first year here. Part of it is we have more depth pitching, but a lot of it is those reasons I just stated. I don't think we have to spend as much time breaking little things down bit by bit, because we're not starting from scratch.
And there's something that's going on during the open date. Are you free to talk about that in terms of what fans should know? They might have the chance to come to Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
Yeah, I'm ready to jump out of the seat and talk about it. It's not as well publicized because it's not a spring game, but we're able to play two fall games. We'll have one on the road in Nashville. One will be here at home, and that one's right around the corner. It's September 28th. We intentionally picked an off Saturday as it relates to football. I know there's other activities that weekend for Tennessee athletics, but it's a day where there's no cost to come to the game. We'll probably play about 18 innings of baseball, so fans could come for the beginning, the middle, the end, stay for the whole thing, just a few innings. Come watch Garrett Crochet pitch, who's going to be a top pick. Whatever suits your fancy, but it's an opportunity to roam around the park and see a few of the additional changes that have happened already, and get a look at this group. And it's going to be against an ACC opponent that has a former Tennessee coach on their coaching staff and is going to have some future big leaguers in that group as well. And it should really make for a fun day. So hoping that fans come out and you know, take advantage of that one opportunity we have this semester.
So that's coming up on Saturday, September 28th. What are some of the things you're pleased with in terms of the work that continues on Lindsey Nelson Stadium, both inside and out?
Well, fans and campers alike will enjoy the fact that we're building a new entrance onto the field. If you're on the right field set of stands, you can't get to and from our field without using the elevator, which is small. So that construction will probably be going on during the game. So that'll be an excuse our progress, but it's positive progress. And then the bullpen was never really completed the way we wanted last year because the turf got installed so late. So the home bullpen is really going to be made into a palace here in the next few weeks with the seating our guys will have, and we'll kind of clean up the padding and so forth. Some changes to the weight room are coming. And then we have a kitchen area that's being built, and then will be installed in our team room before too long. That'll happen in the next couple weeks too. So some things the fans will be able to see as the semester goes on or before the season starts, and other things will be kind of more for our players, the internal part of the building. But progress is being made, and it's pretty exciting. And of course, too, we do not have the approval yet for beverages to be sold, adult beverages, that is, everybody's favorite or most people's. At a baseball game, but that'll most likely happen, and that could kind of change the configuration of what we got going on in the porch area as well as that left field line area.
And so we've already talked about the additions to the Tennessee baseball family in terms of the newcomers to the program, but also there's a newcomer to the Tennessee baseball family, and Josh Elander and his wife just welcomed their first child.
Yeah, Alexandria is a beauty. I went over there last night and could not be more peaceful, so I think he's getting some sleep when he's not on the phone with recruits, but she is truly gorgeous. Obviously looks more like her mom, Brittany, than Josh, but they're very blessed. And, you know, Coach Anderson became a grandfather. I don't know if he wants me to term it that way. He Brett had his first child this summer too, so he had a pretty cool experience. And it's really neat to see that stuff. And I think our staff has, been all on board with seeing this thing through and building it into what we want it to be. And part of that is we've kind of grown roots in the community and got to know people, and families are expanding. So it's pretty cool to watch, and I look forward to continuing. And it's with, again, the help of the administration, we've been able to do that because we've had to beat people off like crazy trying to come in and steal our guys.
Well, and as you joined us last time, you're now a homeowner in the city of Knoxville, so there was that big news. How exciting is this fall for you, just because of what the program's done your first 2 years, the big step it took last year with the return to the NCAA tournament, all that's going on? How excited are you for this fall? I would imagine unlike any other.
You know, just to answer truthfully and give people perspective, whether they want it or not, internally it's been eerie. It's just been so different. And part of it has been 2 years of just scrambling around, running around with your head cut off. And you don't want to get complacent because this is a job where you could work 24 hours in a day if you wanted to. But I just feel like we're able to work a little smarter and put our energy into different areas than we originally could. And by no means are we where we want to be, definitely with the facility, getting to know the community and having some things like community service for our guys being a staple. The roster is great, but you always want to improve that. So, again, not to be complacent, but I think we're in a different spot. And so it'll be interesting if we can take advantage and utilize our time the way I think we have the first 2 years. We've made good progress, but you have to keep pushing forward, whether it's this conference or any. College baseball, there's a lot of parity, and it's so competitive. So hopefully we can work smarter and continue to work hard and make this our favorite fall so far.
Well, it is an exciting time, always is, and we'll catch good luck with everything, with the scrimmage and all that as the start of fall ball is here, and then we'll talk more about what's coming up on the 28th next as we get closer to it. Good luck with everything.
Excellent. Looking forward to it, and thank you.
So that is Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello, and it should be exciting when they have one of their fall exhibitions that'll be a week from Saturday at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. They'll play about 18 innings, and it should be a whole lot of fun. They tried to do it the Friday night before the Alabama game last year, and it kind of just fell apart, and they wound up playing, I think, on Sunday. And so this time they thought, let's just go ahead and do it an open date since there are two on the schedule.
Was there a weather concern last year? Is that what got in the way?
Well, I think what got in the way is that Alabama wasn't allowed to travel on a day when there were classes.
Ah, okay.
So that was, I think, something that got in the way, and they wound up playing on Sunday as opposed to what was going to be the hope of Saturday morning ahead of kickoff for Tennessee and Alabama. But a week from Saturday, Tennessee will be taking on another team at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. We'll get a break. We've got a lot more coming your way on Sports Talk.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1 The Sports Animal with you wherever you go.
A final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
I mentioned earlier about how the SEC over the last 3 years, only one team has a winning record against top 25. That's Alabama. But Alabama and Tennessee have combined for half of those 38 wins in the 38-118 record. Alabama's got 14 of them, but Tennessee's got five. Tennessee's 5-10 against ranked opponents over the last 3 years. Given the state of the program, that's not bad that they've got five wins over ranked teams. Got two last year, beat Auburn and Kentucky. They got went over Virginia Tech when it was ranked, Florida as well along the way. So anyway, I wanted to mention that because we were checking on Tennessee's record. I don't know the rest of the SEC. We just saw the note about Alabama 14-3, everybody else in the SEC, the rest of them 38-118. So not a great record.
Let's get a call from Jimmy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
John and Jimmy, there's one SEC team that hasn't scored any points in the second quarter. You know which team that is?
I'm going to guess Florida.
You hit it. Amazing. And then I was looking at Mullins. He had written an article in the Orlando Sentinel earlier this week, and he was referring to his quarterback practice and said during OTAs or whatever you want to call it in spring ball that all his quarterbacks practice with number ones consistently. And he'd done that because he didn't want them to feel like a deer in the headlight when it come time for them to enter the game. He said he learned that from Urban Myers in 2005 when he was OC. And I think Tebow came in as a freshman and maybe won a natty or something. But I want to get y'all's aspect on why Pruitt doesn't take that, approach.
I don't know that many coaches do, actually. I think most coaches want to give their starting quarterback most of the reps with the first team. If you've got a really good backup quarterback, I think a lot of times you may give him reps with that first team. But I don't think that's a common practice among all coaches. Let me say this, Jimmy, and I'll look this up because I thought that was a strange note about Florida. Florida has not scored in the second quarter of SEC games. That's only one SEC game, and that was Kentucky. It's a little
I said offense.
So their offense has not scored in they've got 14 points in the second quarter. Those were defensive points?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, they've by quarter, they've got 17, 14, 27, and 40 points so far this year.
No, their offense hadn't scored in the second quarter, Jimmy.
Okay. I'm not debating it. I'm just telling you what the stat says about the points per quarter. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I think their first quarter points is like maybe real, real low, like 1.5, something like that. So.
Well, I don't know their defensive scores, so I know they've scored 17 points as a team in the first quarter. Their most productive quarter is the fourth at 40.
Yes. All right. Enjoy the show, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Jimmy. We'll get a break. Hour number three of Sports Talk is next.